trusty money remains the bedrock of stability. The soul of money is trust.
I think we are not paying sufficient attention to the law of unintended consequences.
In the immortal words of the Doors, the time to hesitate is through.
Joan Vallis, how's it going?
It's going great. How you doing?
I'm all right, thank you, man. I appreciate you spending time and energy on discovering Bitcoin and taking us through your Genesis journey on how you discovered Bitcoin and what that experience has been like, you know? So with that in mind, I'm curious to learn, how did you discover Bitcoin?
It's an interesting question. I mean, the simple answer is I was a gold bug. I was critical of the monetary system. I was very independent, you know, libertarian minded, although I never really assigned to myself a particular political ideology. I just very independent person and, you know, independent thinker and thought that, you know, people should be left to their own devices so long as they're not harming other people. Mm. And so that kind of tuned me to read all the books about, you know, I was always a big reader. So I had read a lot of, you know, philosophy and economics and, you know, gold and money and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, the being a gold bug is not a very hopeful or energizing sort of perspective, because, you know, the thesis is basically, well, the monetary system is fucked and everything is going to collapse someday, and so you want to have some gold so you can pay the baker on the corner for some bread. It's like,
right,
well, okay, I mean, if there's no other option, sure, but, you know, that's not going to invigorate you with enthusiasm or hope about the future, that's for damn sure.
Compel you to act either, does it? Sorry to interrupt, but it doesn't compel you to actually contribute to that process, maybe. I mean, other than destruction.
You find yourself wanting your thesis to be confirmed, and so therefore you find yourself wanting everything to collapse and things to kind of descend into chaos,
right?
And you also know in the back of your head, it's like, well, because a lot of gold bugs would say, no, we don't want that. We just want, you know, to return to a sound money standard like we had before. But in the back of your head, you know, yeah, but why are we in the place we're in? It's because that didn't work. You know, we can't revert back to something because it didn't work. That's why we're in this mess. What are you going to do? So you do that, and then you try to, you know, focus on the good things about your life and not try to participate in fixing the grand thing, but just, you know, dialing yourself into whatever niche you're into, and wherever you can find meaning and hope and joy and that kind of stuff. I honestly don't remember like my first touch point to Bitcoin. I do remember listening to Andreas in 2013, sorry. I do actually kind of remember. I do remember my first exposure. My friend and I, being a curious person and being independently minded ultimately led me to investigating psychedelics when I was, you know, probably 19, 20 years old. And I say investigating, I mean, my first exposure was just, you know, being silly with my friends and, you know, having a laugh with each other. Mm-hmm. But what actually happened on one of those occasions was I had like double dosed myself of some mushroom tea, and the experience that I was anticipating, which was like, you know, just a giggle fest with my friends, turned into something far more, you know, serious and far more powerful.
Wow.
And it was super challenging. And, you know, I won't get into the details unless you want to later, but the punchline is after, you know, I had a very, very powerful, let's say, for experience, very challenging. You know, all my friends were there and everyone was just kind of having a good time. And I just kind of made a mental note, like, I'll enjoy the evening. And then tomorrow when I wake up, this is priority number one. So I wake up the next morning, get on Amazon, order every single book there is on psychedelics and go down that rabbit hole. And then as a result of that, and having gone down that rabbit hole, my friend and I, years later, were wanting to, I guess, effectively experiment with DMT, you know, crystalline DMT, not, you know, the DMT that might be in ayahuasca or something like that. And the Silk Road is what the only option that we were aware of. And so we get on there and, you know, there's all sorts of stuff there. And we found DMT and we were informed, or we discovered, that we had to get some Bitcoin in order to transact on the platform. Mm-hmm. And of course, we pussied out because, one, getting Bitcoin at the time was a fairly cumbersome process and we just couldn't be bothered. And two, we didn't really want to have drugs delivered to a P.O. box or our home or whatever. So we just left it. And, you know, of course, as with so many people, to our everlasting regret. But one of the things that I think should comfort a lot of people about, you know, that first pass with Bitcoin, and then they're like, oh, I could have so much more Bitcoin than I have now. You probably wouldn't have held it.
No.
You would have sold it after, you know, a doubled or a 10x'd, or, you know, the hands you need, the conviction you need to hold Bitcoin, is much more than just, you know, having the sense or the good fortune to buy it the first time.
Well, and you'd so be lucky a lot of, to hold it. I mean, you're more often probably going to lose it, to be honest.
Well, you'll lose it, or you'll sell it, because you won't appreciate what you have. You'll trade it for shit coins, which many people went down that route. And so, you know, don't beat yourself up too much about the whole, you know, I could have way more Bitcoin sort of thing. But that was my first pass. And then, you know, probably a year or so later, because I remember Bitcoin being at $1, like when it hit $1, and there was kind of, as I recall, like it was, people were saying that they were excited that it kind of hit parity, right? And then however long later, a year or so, I was listening to Andreas, and more so than understanding, you know, everything he was saying, I could just tell that this person was sincere. You know, I could tell that this person was humble and was genuine. And that's what allowed me to listen to him more than, you know, I might listen to, you know, the big, you know, the sound money promoters online that, you know, either are overly arrogant or egotistical or have something to sell you or whatever. Like Andreas, the way he was speaking was what appealed to me. And then, you know, I was just an observer for a while, because unfortunately one of his, you know, common refrains was, you know, after you listen to me, don't go out and buy some. Just continue to educate yourself. And I think, you know, a more perhaps appropriate approach would be to do both. Get a little more learn, you know. Of course, I can't blame him for that. And then I was living in China at the time and working a lot, and I thought the only way to get Bitcoin was to set up an account with BTCC, which was an exchange at the time run by Bobby Lee in China. And I had so few days off of work, because I was working like 20, 30 days, weekdays straight, and could never get off, and weekends rather, and could never get off before the banks closed. So I could never get there to send my money to the exchange. And even if I could, at the time, you could only do 500 US dollars at a time, and you had to send it to Hong Kong first. And again, it was a whole big mess, and it was it made you realize how cumbersome and inefficient the legacy banking system is in the first place. And then I realized I found local Bitcoins, and that was a far more, you know, convenient way to acquire Bitcoin. And then, you know, time goes forward and you keep learning, you make mistakes, you lose Bitcoin, again referring to all those things I just mentioned, why you have less than you otherwise might. And then I guess sometime in, I think 2018 was when like everything became extremely crystal clear for me. Even in 17, there's so much noise about, you know, I always had known that Bitcoin was the thing, but, you know, greed, I guess, got the better of me, and you think you can be clever and, you know, you think there's something going on with all this other stuff. How could there not be? It's like, look at how much it's all worth. Look what the market is saying about it. But in 18, it really crystallized for me what was going on here. And that's actually when the real intellectual journey began, because you realize in one's attempt to understand what Bitcoin is, it's seemingly so consequential, so fundamental, so relevant and impactful to so many areas of our lives. Like, you end up having to educate yourself on a broad spectrum of things, be they economic, social, cultural, philosophical, theological, even, as crazy as it sounds.
Yeah.
And that's been my journey ever since. It's been like going in all those domains and seeing what insights can be drawn from them and applied to an understanding of Bitcoin for its, you know, might enhance my understanding of Bitcoin. And of course, you know, having these conversations is part of that process, speaking to other people who are doing the same or speaking to other people who have started that process earlier and might be able to help you in that regard. And so that's why I started my podcast in the fall of 2019, because like you just said, I mean, I was just sitting around being like blowing my own mind and needing one, an outlet for all that enthusiasm and excitement and curiosity. Like I need to share have those conversations with people. But of course, you know, I wanted to speak to people that have been in the space longer than me or entrepreneurs or people that are tangentially related and try to, you know, get wisdom out of them, get insights from them so that I can enhance my own understanding. And it's been, well, I mean, I guess the punchline, it's been radically transformative, really. I mean, as so many people will probably echo, like once you begin that process, which we might say is instigated and led by Bitcoin, just ends up delivering to you a perspective that seems so much more grounded in truth about yourself, about the world, about how things work, about what the future could be. And so that, you know, that lens of truth obviously has relevance in so many areas of your life. And that seems to be the case. And so it's just been incredibly enjoyable and invigorating to, you know, participate in that and have it, in my opinion, upgrade my perspective in that way so that I can better pursue value and meaning as I move into the future.
The whole concept of a protocol, and I've mentioned this before a few times on the podcast, but the whole concept of effectively code, text, mathematics, a protocol, compelling a person to seek these things out, you know, you dive down the Bitcoin rabbit hole expecting to just make gains, you know, fiat gains, and you discover all of these little tunnels and warrens leading off into all of these other directions. And quite literally, at least in my experience, almost every direction on anything, like you can even return back to the thing that you were most passionate about prior to Bitcoin and connect the dots and start to see how it's all interrelated. And it just, it continues and will probably always continue to blow my mind that effectively we're just talking about a protocol which is akin to the email protocol, you know, or any other protocol that exists in a network to connect people, to communicate information. It's compelling individuals to as you said, seek out the truth and find these different ways of being, which are ultimately, I guess you could make the case for it, and you've certainly explored this on your Bitcoin Rapid Fire podcast over the years, is a net benefit to the individual, like a total positive. And that just freaks me out.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's... I don't know. I know what you mean, but like, you know, freak out is one way of putting it, but it's just endlessly fascinating. You know, it's so weird. You know, I think that's part of what people think about it. It's like, how could it be? And, you know, we fill up our minds with information about it, and then we let our minds kind of, you know, wander about, try to like have these insights pop up or epiphanies pop up in our mind. And if you're like most people, like they actually do, and you're just sitting around and you're thinking about it, and boom, it hits you, and you're like, oh shit, you know, and that seems to be a continuous process with Bitcoin. And, you know, I think there's no simple answer to that, to why that is the case. But I do think, you know, in a very fundamental sense, it points to the value and, you know, the centrality, I guess, of truth, of truthful information itself. And it's, you know, and the capacity for information to remain true, and the type of information that it is, you know. So, you know, to use perhaps an overly simplified example, like talk is cheap, right? Like, you know, you could talk about any philosophy, idea, political ideology, all irrelevant. The only real information that is real is your action. What does your action say about who you are, what you think? Because it's those actions in conjunction with the actions of everyone else that literally manifests the world that we see and that we contend with. And so, you know, you can espouse whatever philosophy, but it's absolutely irrelevant. And what's relevant is your actions. And money is a means of communicating the values inherent in your actual actions, not in what you say, because money is a representation of your energy, of your time, of the sacrifices that you've made in order to acquire it. And you have a limited amount of it. And that's why, it, you know, that's why what it communicates is so relevant. And so when we have the truest, the most truthful action-derived information represented in a money that cannot be corrupted so that it can maintain its truthfulness, I think what we're discovering is just how important and valuable that is. Just how important and valuable truth is. Mm. Like, and of course, like when you start to poke around at that notion or that idea, I mean, you are led, and this is why I alluded to it a moment ago, you are led to some of the deepest philosophical or theological investigations that, you know, human civilization has conjured up, because that's always been one of the central points. The truth shall set you free. You know, truth being synonymous with the order of the universe or the notion of God, for example. Like, these things, as much as I hate to, you know, be the one to break it to people, because a lot of people, you know, want to stay in a very, keep this in a very secular bucket, you know, keep this in, no, this is just a technology and it's just a tool and has nothing to do with belief systems or philosophies or anything. You know, and my refrain is almost like, well, first of all, everything has something to do with belief systems. All your actions are predicated on a value hierarchy that you hold internally. And those themselves are predicated on certain belief systems or axioms or ideologies. So every action you take, the use of a tool or the not use of a tool, is imbued with a belief system. And the question here is like, what information, what does that reveal about belief systems and words and ideas and notions and philosophies that we've been toying with and discussing over the millennia? How does this thing give us greater clarity on those things? And even more, how is it even perhaps even an intersubjective material manifestation of some of those things that previously were just ideas and notions? And, you know, I don't have the answers, but I'm definitely willing to be, you know, one of the crazy people on the fringe asking those questions, because I guess if I have to be, you know, honest with myself, I have a faith that there's something redemptive about doing so. There's something valuable about doing so. Like, the more I can understand this thing and the more I can engage it and the more I can engage other people doing the same, there's something beneficial to be gained from doing that. And perhaps the most special beneficial thing to be gained from doing that. And so, you know, perhaps that's a big part of my motivation for focusing on this at the exclusion of, you know, a great many other things.
Yeah. I mean, it captivates you, really. And it,
oh yeah,
it holds you hostage in a way, because once you start to really click, and you'll never fully comprehend or understand, I don't think. But once you get a general sense, it really just, all your synapses just fire to Bitcoin. They just fire off to this protocol, this 10-minute block time. Why do you think that you are open and able, predispositioned to discovering Bitcoin?
Well, like I said about kind of my intro into gold buggery, I had always just been curious and open-minded and I suppose skeptical.
Mm-hmm.
I, as far back as I can remember as a kid, like, I just fascinated with the mystery, I guess is one way of putting it, and not super content with just accepting simple answers or, you know, the information or the education that was handed to me. So I just, who knows why certain among us are more tuned for curiosity than others, but I certainly seem to have been one of those that was. And I guess part of it too, I mean, again, who knows what goes into becoming who we become? I mean, there's, you know, nature, nurture, right? And so there's your family, and then there's the conditioning of your culture and the people you meet and all that kind of stuff. But I can say that I grew up in a family that wasn't overbearing in imposing any particular ideology, whether it be political or religious or economic or anything. And, you know, maybe that's good, maybe it's bad, but I say it just to say, you know, like, there was space to think differently. And then, you know, I think I had some exposure to interesting people growing up as a result of both members of my family and people that my father and also people that someone he worked for. And I think, you know, that just kind of kindled the fire. Like they were, again, one example, but he worked for kind of like an oddball tycoon sort of guy, you know, in the media space in Canada. And so he was very bizarre, but extremely wealthy. And I loved it, right? I'd sit at his feet and he'd tell me about, you know, the aliens building the pyramids and an elongated skull he bought in the black market in Peru and why he puts all of his money in gold and why he's messing around with an all butter diet, you know, and all these things that were non-conventional. And I was just like amazed by it all. And of course it someone like that is, if they weren't wealthy, you'd say, well, this person is crazy and you have to dismiss them. But the fact that they've been able to take the same perspective that is sharing that information with you, and that perspective has also resulted in great wealth, well, then you have to pay attention. Or at least I felt that way, because it's like, it's not so easily dismissed, let's say.
Right.
And so I guess all that taken together, I just never really bought the mainstream easy narrative and always wanted to ask deeper questions and pursue those things. And, you know, as a teenager, the other thing was as the story goes, the kids on the street that we used to play together, right? Like street hockey or tag or hide and go seek, whatever. I remember I was probably 10 years old or something. And one of the girls that lived on the street or lived on one of the streets nearby, she said that she'd skipped a grade, you know, she went from grade 5 to 7 or something like that. And, you know, every kid hates school. So I was just like, how the hell did you skip a grade? And all she said was like, oh, I just read a lot. And I was like, what do you mean you just read a lot? What does that mean? Like, how, they just give you, like, you send them a book list and they're like, cool, you can skip a grade. And she was like, no, like, I'm better at school because I read a lot. And I was like, right. So I went home that day and my dad had like a big, you know, not a huge library, but a few shelves of books in the TV room. And I was like, I'm going to read as many of these as I can. And so, you know, I started taking them off the shelf and reading them. And they were varied, you know, they were about psychology or business or philosophy or strategy or whatever. And you know, that I just caught the bug then. And so I would always just pursue that. And of course, you do that enough and you realize, wow, like, you know, what you hear on the news or what the, you know, what your friends think is a very narrow version of the truth, if it's even hovering above it at all. Mm. And oftentimes it probably isn't. It's so simplistic as to be wrong. And so that kicked off, you know, that fanned the flames of both my skepticism and my curiosity. And then, you know, on you go from there into various rabbit holes.
Imagine if your old man didn't actually have the plethora of books on his shelf. Maybe they were just like a stack of magazines or something. Maybe if, can you imagine if you happened to be just the random, you know, number generator spat you out in a completely different universe where your parents weren't interested in reading those books and all you had access to was bullshit.
Like, yeah, I know. I mean, yeah. It's weird, right? I mean, sometimes you look back on your life and you wish like, oh, I wish I'd had exposure to different things earlier. I wish I'd come up in a different environment. But I mean, it's either crazy random and you're just lucky, or, you know, maybe there's some order to it in some way that we can't really understand. Maybe it's just a pattern that we're not capable of, you know, perceiving at this point. But either way, I tend to look back and be grateful that I had, you know, sufficient exposure to, you know, non-normal thinking or subjects or themes. And that seems to have primed me sufficiently to keep the ball rolling as I got older.
Yeah, right on. How has Bitcoin changed you? I know this is a subject that you like to touch on quite a bit, but I'm curious to learn how, yeah, discovering Bitcoin has changed you.
Yeah, that's a big one and kind of tough. But I've said in the past, like, you know, a lot of the changes that you find Bitcoiners making as they go down the rabbit hole, like, you know, they start to see things differently. Maybe their political views change. Maybe their approaches to diet you know, an exercise change. Maybe they're maybe they become more frugal. Maybe they're more open to philosophical, you know, sort of idea. All that kind of stuff was already me before all this. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, like sometimes I've said, I felt like I was like a Bitcoiner before Bitcoin. But, you know, if I just kind of, without thinking about it too much, just, you know, what pops in my head when you ask me that question, I think a certain degree of confidence or security over the future, or perhaps a large degree, has been, has emerged in my mind or in my life. You know, like when you know you have, you know, one of the functions of money is to better deal with the chaos of the unknown future, right? It's optionality on the future. And so when you know you have a form of that optionality, that thing that can see you through the chaos of the future, that can't be taken from you, that can't be debased, that can't be, you know, that it's yours, and there's a high likelihood no one's going to disintermediate that relationship. Well, I think that just gives you a sense of calmness about the future. You know, I think it dials down your anxiety about the future. And why that's important is because if you can dial down your anxiety about the future, then you see, you have more space, more, you know, thought space available for considering what are the things that are most valuable to you, most meaningful to you. What about the future do you most want to contribute to? What about, like, what kind of a future do you want to see? What kind of a future do you think is even possible? And so once that flip switch or switches or it begins to change, it just opens up a whole kind of new attitude towards the future. And of course, that is felt in the present, right? That lesser anxiety, that more hopefulness, that more enthusiasm, that more excitement, that more energy is all unlocked here and now as a result of a changed perception about the future. So that's, you know, that's definitely been a big change, which manifests in, you know, pretty much all areas of life, really. And, you know, another big change is kind of by virtue of being somewhat involved in the space. It's just, I've met so many awesome people, you know. I was fortunate to have, you know, some great close friends growing up and throughout my life. And so I say this not wanting to, you know, disparage those relationships whatsoever, but I was also always kind of the different one a little bit, you know, the one who got the, you know, like if we were discussing something, I'd be the one that says like the kind of contrarian thing and get the eye roll and the laugh and dismissal sort of thing. And it's just been, it's cool to hang around with a group of people now that kind of, you know, sees the world in a similar way. And I think by virtue of the fact that, you know, our values line up in a very similar way, and those, not incidentally, I'm sure, are the values that I would say are represented in Bitcoin, right? The reverence for truth, for freedom, for fairness, all those things that the protocol has literally built into it and that we feel as, you know, ethics almost. I feel now I'm sharing those things with way more people just by virtue of the fact of, you know, my putting myself out there and sharing these conversations with everyone. It's made it easier for those relationships to be established, you know, so at conferences or on these sorts of podcasts and stuff like that, I've just been able to meet so many awesome people, and many of those encounters have turned into, you know, very, very close friendships. And, you know, what's better than that? I mean, I think the thing that's best about life is probably relationships, both romantic and friendship and familial relationships. And you can't do much about the latter in terms of having more of them. Well, at least you can have more kids, but you can't go backwards, let's say. You may only have one or potentially a few romantic, you know, super meaningful romantic relationships, but you can have unlimited numbers of like really close friends, and that enriches life tremendously. And it's been great for, you know, that's been a huge benefit of being of Bitcoin in my life, is that I've just been able to meet so many like-minded and inspirational and intelligent and courageous and principled people.
You mentioned like you could just, it enables you to be yourself. Like you don't have to pass through all of this superficial bullshit
to get to the thing that you want to talk about. So when you meet these people within the Bitcoin space, it's almost like you just go straight to the deeper stuff. And it's not like some woo-woo thing where you're just constantly talking about deep and meaningful conversations. But what I mean is you don't have, Daniel Prince mentioned, non-versations. They're kind of like, and you'll never get like an eye roll from one of these people. They'll at least entertain that thought and maybe help you to pick it apart, tease it out, refine it, iterate on it, whatever. Whereas, and as you said, not to be disparaging to, you know, high school friends and that sort of thing, kids you grew up with, I feel a similar way where, you know, I was kind of that guy that would always say the thing that everyone's like, yeah, cool, man. Like, all right, just like, let's follow the sports feeling, you know?
Yeah.
And then, you know, the other thing you mentioned was just that cultivation of relationships. What I find really interesting is how those people who've found themselves in the Bitcoin space, that discovered Bitcoin, allowed themselves to be open to it, they tend to speak in this particular sort of optimistic way, more assured of themselves and who they are as an individual. And when you try and talk to someone about Bitcoin and the benefits and so on and so forth, this is part and parcel of the whole point of the podcast, is that maybe someone out there who, you know, has heard about Bitcoin but hasn't really understood it or whatever, they can listen to this and learn by osmosis. And there's a consistent thread, a universal thread that flows through these discussions, I think, where there's just pure optimism and just a gratefulness to be here and to cultivate relationships and stuff. And I don't understand how you can walk away from listening to something like what you've just said and think that Bitcoin is a scam. I mean, at the very least, it's at the very least, irrespective of the value it may provide in terms of monetary value, it's got to be like that. There's a value there somewhere. You have to recognize
that. At the very least, it's a positive social phenomenon, you might say.
Right on. Yeah.
Even if it doesn't end up being an economic one. And that is actually, you know, the other major point for me in terms of how Bitcoin has changed my life. Like, as a result of being so curious and, you know, reading as much as I could about pretty much everything at a young age, you know, I came, you know, as I got into my teenage years, I was like, wow, the world is not like sunshine and rainbows like you're kind of taught when you're a kid. Like, a lot of things are really messed up, and most people have no idea how they're messed up. And absent a solution, and again, like, being a gold bug was definitely not a solution, I felt like a type of despair, like a type of hopelessness, like, wow, I don't see how these things can get turned around. Now, what I defaulted to was my own development, because I thought and still think, like, the only way these things can get turned around is if each individual changes the way they think, they speak, they act, and, you know, that would be a way to do it. But I just didn't see how that process could get kicked off in everyone, because, you know, the very system that we have is basically set up. And again, it's not like a only imposed on us. Like, we bring that onto ourselves. Like, what our demands is what creates the system we're in, right? If you demand, you know, potato chips and ice cream and all that stuff, well, the market will conjure it up. So I'm not just I'm not suggesting, you know, a big conspiracy cabal of like this top-down control. Yes, there are groups that collude and try to advance their own interests and agenda, of course. And when it happens at different scales, it feels more all-encompassing. But, you know, it still is up to us to say yay or nay to whatever is offered to us. And based on our decisions there, we get the world and the culture that we currently contend with. But my issue is just like, I saw so many of those issues, and I didn't see that much interest in people recognizing that and changing their ways to create a fairer, more peaceful, more prosperous, more, you know, meaning-filled world. Mm-hmm. And so there was an element or a strong element of despair there, you know, and it kind of counter to that, what I mentioned about Bitcoin instigating this intellectual fervor, it ended up kind of having the opposite effect. And what was a tremendous intellectual fervor in my teenage years you know, pretty much went away in my early 20s because I was like, I don't want to know anymore about the world. Like, I got it and it doesn't look great. And so I'm just going to focus narrowly instead of broadly now on whatever it is I'm doing. And I don't think that's good. That's not a way to expand yourself into the world. And Bitcoin came along. And again, you know, you'll appreciate this. I'm not sure how much your listeners will, but as we said, it not only does it help you see things differently and ostensibly more clearly and more truthfully, but it represents a corrective mechanism for nearly all of those issues that I had identified because it addresses the problem on such a fundamental level, on the primary level of incentive for basically all action and all exchange, i.e. the money.
Yeah.
And when I saw that, when I got that, that despair just basically went away, or as that process unfolded, it went away. And what was despair just turned into hyper-energized hope, basically, because you can now see a way forward. You can now see how all those things can be rectified. And you can also see that it's not going to necessarily be a push. It's not like convincing each individual, oh, you got to change your ways, you got to do things differently, you got to stop supporting these people. The incentive will do all of that on its own. So now you know, not only do you see a solution, but you see like a solution that's incredibly viable because it's a solution that people are going to opt into on their own because it benefits them, and you don't have to force anything on anyone.
Yeah. I mean, beyond discovering Bitcoin, discovering incentives and understanding how powerful they are, you know, it like that just completely changed my whole worldview, really. It's just understanding those incentives and the fact that a sound money, the best money in the form of Bitcoin, actually instantiates those positive incentives in an individual, as opposed to the opposite side of that trade, to speak in broad terms, fiat. It does lead you to this nihilism that you were sort of alluding to, that you started to feel, all right, I've got a clear sense of the world and it looks like a bit of a shithole socioculturally, you know, biologically and naturally, it's just phenomenal. But we've got these systems and structures built on top of it that are just wrecking the joint. And, you know, but how am I going to fix that as an individual? Okay, well, I'll work on myself and maybe that'll rub off on some other people. But, you know, who knows? And I guess there is an element of that too in Bitcoin too, except that it's also got this this economic pull that as you said, will just draw people in, because they'll come in for the gains, and if they're curious and open-minded enough to stay, then they will pursue whatever path down the rabbit hole that they find themselves on, and then hopefully be able to connect it back to whatever they're initial passions were or incorporate into their life somehow, which is, you know, again, it's a phenomenon. I still can't wrap my brain around it.
Yeah. It's always hard to articulate one's thoughts or understanding about this thing because there's so many different aspects of it that you can address. And of course, there's also your knowledge is limited. So you can only address the aspect you're attempting to address in what seems like a very limited form, you know, so not the easiest thing to talk about, but of course, you know, there's so much enthusiasm that we continue to try.
That's it. What have you learned? I guess we've sort of touched on this a little bit, but you know, what have you learned about the world and yourself, you know, and how they may interrelate with one another since discovering Bitcoin?
Well, I guess this is kind of what we were just discussing, but I think I've learned that, you know, those fundamental principles or virtues that, you know, throughout the course of life, if you're at all, or if you're introspective, if you care about, you know, what is most fundamental, if you're kind of curious about the great philosophical or theological questions, Bitcoin has allowed me to see how they can be bridged from the internal to the external world, basically, how they can be manifest in the external world. Because before I didn't really see it. Like, you can be, you know, to go to one extreme. You can be the Godhead internally, right? You can do all that development. But, and, you know, I'm not discounting the degree to which, you know, your own refinement impacts the world, because it shows up in all of your interactions and it influences people. And, you know, you smile to someone on the sidewalk instead of frowning and it changes their day, and it butterfly effect and all that great stuff, right? But it didn't seem like it was a very efficient, there was a very efficient transmission from, you know, your adherence to certain values and principles internally and their manifestation or their expression or their the degree to which they're elevated or amplified or valued in the world. It didn't seem like a, you know, a proper mechanism for that to happen. And again, it seems like in Bitcoin there is. I mean, it seems like it's a literal instantiation of those principles that we would probably all agree on are the most important and or most fundamental, you know, like the idea of truth and honesty, like the idea of individual freedom, like the idea of fairness, a fair playing field for all, no advantages based on, you know, no different rule set for anyone in particular. Of course, merit will determine differences between people, of course, but fairness, the ethic of fairness, and that those have been, so one, it's kind of mind-blowing that those primary fundamental principles or virtues have been built into the world in a manner as they have been in Bitcoin, and that they have been instantiated in an indestructible or incorruptible or immutable manner. I mean, that's mind-blowing in itself. And then in the form of, and perhaps there was no other form that it could have taken, but in the form of what we call money. And as a result of that, not only them being there out in the world, but them being the primary component of that master incentive that you were just alluding to a moment ago. And as a result, like those things being imbued into people as a result of them pursuing that incentive, like them getting exposure and reinforcement of those principles constantly as a result of interacting with the incentives that those very things are propagating and sending out and signaling into the market. And so, you know, that's what comes to my mind, is just that the greater fidelity of the relationship or transmission between what is most fundamental and valuable internally and what can be most fundamental, valuable, and productive of the good externally. You know, that relationship between the two domains being established more clearly and more powerfully than ever before, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, it enables you to pursue things that you will enjoy, as opposed to endure the things that you think you need to. For instance, this podcast, like I do this on the side because I just needed to scratch this itch. Like I constantly think about it, so I just needed to scratch an itch, and I was like, all right, let's just see how it goes, whatever. The thing is, I've had the confidence to start it because of the fact that I know that there's an allocation of time, that sort of uncertainty of the future that you were alluding to. It's sort of like, all right, as long as I stack this week, we should be cool, and I can allocate a little bit of time to maybe trying to reach out to someone like John Vallis and see if they want to have a conversation with me about this thing. And, you know, lo and behold, here we are chatting. And it's like, it's given you that confidence to stand up to the world and actually face it head on, I suppose, you know. Sure. and try Absolutely. And then make a contribution to yeah. create some sort of value, to be of service, I guess. I don't
hear. Well, I mean, I think that's one of the prime effects of engaging with and trying to understand Bitcoin, is that it does fundamentally cause you to, you know, consider the notion of value more so than you ever have before. And, you know, and what is value? What is valuable to you? And what value can you provide? And, you know, these questions just continue to recur as a result of engaging this thing. And I think that's good, right? Because value is what drives all action. Like as the saying goes, why did the chicken cross the road? Because it valued what was on the other side more. And so if you have greater clarity about what you value, what's valuable to you, and what is of value about you, about yourself, then you're more able to act well, act righteously, act successfully, act productively in the world. And, you know, I think that's a very, very good thing. And I see that happening amongst, you know, all the people I speak to. You know, their notion and their reconfiguring of their so-called hierarchies of value internally is occurring, and it's manifesting a lot of benefits in their lives.
Yeah, absolutely. So with all that said, how do you orange pill someone? How do you explain Bitcoin?
Well, as anybody listening might be able to surmise at this point, I don't really do it. I dismiss Bitcoin pretty much, unless, you know, someone reveals themselves to me to be like a Bitcoiner, or otherwise, like, everything else is kind of lined up just as it was for me prior to Bitcoin, and, you know, I can tell they'd be receptive, very receptive to it, then I might open a conversation about it. But I feel no inclination to orange pill anybody, for a couple reasons. One, I just don't see it as a responsibility. It's not why I started the podcast, nor am I trying to educate anybody. As you said, I mean, it was purely to scratch my own itch, and it still is. Like, most of the people I talk to these days on the podcast are just random people on Twitter, like, you know, so-called plebs that, that, you know, want to have a chat. As much as I appreciate, you know, the so-called thought leaders in the space, you know, a lot of, they've been interviewed a lot already, you know, and people generally know their thinking. Now their thinking is evolving too. And so there's always, you know, there's a definite benefit of going back to that well. But for me, I'm just most intrigued by speaking to all the people all over the world who are being subjected to the same phenomenon that we've been describing here today. You know, like it's that's the most compelling thing to me is doesn't matter if you're in the US or Germany or Australia or Thailand, like this same effect is being felt by so many people. And I want to connect with them, and I want to hear about their stories and the way they're thinking about it, and engage in a conversation where we both can hopefully refine our thinking about it, where I can come up with new ideas or new ways of articulating, you know, these ideas and discovering new insights and stuff like that. So, remind me of the question? I lost myself.
Well, no, it was how do you orange pill people? And you pretty much answered it, which
right,
was,
right.
I don't.
Right. So the first part is that I don't really do it. The second part of the answer, I knew there was a second part, is I don't think people are persuaded very much by a good argument. Like, I don't think people are very susceptible to, like, verbal persuasion, because people are very set in their ways. I mean, people have their ideologies and their opinions, and they have their habits and all that kind of stuff. And Bitcoin is such a paradigm shift that you're proposing something to them that basically is, for them to accept it, is effectively asking them to reconsider everything that they currently know and reconsider everything that they derive comfort from. You know, because your perception of the world and the how you understand it to be is what alleviates that anxiety about the chaos of the future. Not only so money does that, yes, but so does your perspective on things. Say this is known, and so it may not be 100% accurate, but it, like, that, call it your ego, call it your perspective, whatever, that allows you to move through the world with a certain degree of comfort and account for the chaos of the future. And when you approach someone and say, well, all that's going to need to be recapitulated because of this thing, there's both a conscious and a subconscious resistance to that, I think. And so I think the best way to orange pill people is just, and this is, like, you know, this is always, has always been the wisdom. And I, you know, I'm by no means, I fail at it. But it's to try to be the best person you can be, as cliche as it sounds. And, you know, if Bitcoin is so beneficial, if it has all these wonderful benefits that we've been describing, then showcase it. Then have them reveal themselves in your life. And then, because what most people do is not change their opinion based on someone persuading them of something. It's them observing other people that they admire or envy or have something they want or are doing something they want to do. And then they ask themselves the question, what are they doing that I'm not, that's allowing them to have that experience or that life? And that's what you want to facilitate. And so if Bitcoin is so great, then bring the benefits of it into your life as much as possible, and then just wait and allow other people to look at your example and be like, how do they have X, Y, and Z that I want? And then they'll go through what they can perceive about you. It's like, well, I do that too. I do that too. I do that too. I did. Oh, they're really into this Bitcoin thing. Mm-hmm. And maybe that'll instigate, you know, their own curiosity to figure it out. But as for like overtly orange pilling people, other than my immediate family, which was done kind of long ago, I don't do it whatsoever.
That's fair enough, man. And I think that's a bit of an arc too, because I guess when you first, I guess, discover Bitcoin.
Oh yeah, when you first get into it, you want to scream it from the rooftops, right?
Yeah, you want to tell everybody, and then you slowly realize, and I can think of some pretty cringe moments in the past where I've been like, fuck, I must have sounded like a crazy person. And I probably did sound like a crazy person, never mind must have.
I'm sorry. No, I thought you were done. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, you just refine your target audience, I suppose, over time.
Well, sure, yeah. And the thing is anyone who you're trying to persuade of something, who you're saying, you know, fairly outlandish things to, the first thing they're going to do is going to say, who the fuck is this motherfucker to be telling, like presuming to tell me shit that's good for me that I don't already know? And the first thing they're going to do is look at you and be like, and if they're not impressed, they're not going to listen. Doesn't matter how logical or rational or well articulated your argument is. If you're presuming to tell them something they don't already know that's good for them, and then they look at you and they're not impressed, they won't listen. Mm. So again, it falls back to that idea of, if there really are benefits to this thing that are so amazing, bring them into your life, live them out, and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, let it speak for itself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't asked this question on the pod before, but we talk a lot about stacking sats, and you know, it sort of incentivizes, if such a thing exists, an altruistic form of greed. But I'm curious to learn, how much is enough?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, my boring answer is, I mean, that's a very subjective thing.
Yeah.
What are your ambitions? What do you want to do in life, you know? What do you want to build? What are your goals, whether it be family, business, what have you? And of course, if we give a nominal Bitcoin amount, well, then it's highly dependent on the time frame that we're looking at, right? Because the purchasing power of Bitcoin today will likely be very different than its purchasing power 10 years from now. So, but I think the source of your question comes from, you know, how much should you obsess over acquiring as many sats as you can versus focusing on and enjoying the other valuable components of life, right? Like, how much should you sacrifice for a future benefit in the present? And that's always the, you know, the trick about time preference and economizing and these sorts of things. So it highly depends on what you want, but I think what a lot of Bitcoiners are finding is that as a result of this recapitulation of value that I just alluded to, they're finding that the things that they value most in life are mostly non-material, and as a result, mostly don't have a cost. Now, raising a family obviously has a cost, and feeding yourself and all this kind of stuff. But, you know, counter to mainstream opinion of this industry, you know, and obviously I would separate Bitcoin from all the shitcoin stuff, mm-hmm. but it's that like these people just want to get rich quick and buy Lambos. And I haven't met one single person in Bitcoin that has that perspective. Quite the opposite. Most of them you know, what they value most is their family, is their relationships with their friends, is living in a natural, beautiful environment, is eating good, healthy food, is freedom, being able to do what they want to do, you know, unencumbered, you know, those sorts of things. And most of those things, again, aside from, you know, raising a family, perhaps, like, they're very low cost. And so you can siphon your excess income, your savings into Bitcoin, not just because you want like as much as you possibly can get so you can spend it all in the future, but because it's just like the most sensible thing to do. Like it's more sensible to preserve that value and allow it to grow into the future for contending with the uncertainty about the future, or having the capacity to act on ambitions that might emerge, instead of just spending them frivolously in the present on things I might not need, you know. So I think it, rather than the point of like feeling like it's a sacrifice and just stacking sats that way, because that might become exhausting and maybe you'll regret it in the future if you lose your stack or whatever happens. I think what's mostly happening is people are simply just not wasting money on things that they don't actually really value all that much, that seem wasteful, that seem overly materialistic. They're focusing on the things of greatest value, and they're finding that that naturally restrains or constrains their budget. And then, you know, at the end of the day, in the future, Bitcoin is just going to be money. It's just going to be how you preserve the fruits of your labor for the future. And so, well, if I'm not spending it all on all this material stuff and I have it, well, I'm just going to put it in Bitcoin anyways, because that's how I want to save. And so I think that potentially could be a healthier approach. But again, it very much depends on your ambitions. If you want to, I don't know, buy a professional sports team in the future, then maybe you got to stack your ass off now. But so to each their own.
I can't imagine owning a professional sports team. That'd be a ball ache.
yeah, me neither. But it was the high ticket item that came to mind.
Oh, look, it's the 100%. It's the plaything of the rich and aspirational now, isn't it? It's almost like a store of value, really. If you could maybe make that argument, they're kind of looking for a store of value. John, this has been an incredible privilege to be able to speak with you. There is very little ego in this space, but it is always a joy to be able to connect with people that, you know, as you alluded to, are kind of like the higher profile people. My point is that you've made an incredible contribution to the Bitcoin space, and me personally, I've listened to a lot of your podcasts on walks and at the gym and just trying to understand this thing, and your insights and your conversations with various people have made an impact on my life. So to be able to do this with you is a huge privilege and a joy. So I thank you for that. And thanks for sharing your scarce time and finite energy.
Well, thank you for saying that, man. It does bring me a lot of happiness to hear that feedback, because as I said, I mean, I never did it for that purpose, nor do I even, you know, you may be finding this as you go through, you know, start your own podcast. Everyone kind of approaches it differently, but my case has always been, I never imagine there's anyone on the other end of the mic. You know, it's just, I can't, I don't know. I have a blockage about it, you know? So it's always, it brings me joy to hear that people get value from it. So I really appreciate those kind words. And it's been an honor for me to be able to jump on and have this discussion with you. And, you know, I look forward to doing it again sometime.
Yeah, thank you, man. Where can people find out a little bit more about John Vallis? Where can they follow you on Twitter and listen to, obviously, Bitcoin Rapid Fire and CT?
I think, you know, Twitter is probably the gateway to everything. So my handle is just John K. Vallis, JohnKVallis. And all the other stuff can be found from there.
Awesome, man. Appreciate your time. Thank you so much. We'll catch up soon.
All right, brother. Take care.